Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, and they're available through the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17, almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions. And if you have any of those you'd like to share with us, give us a call, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. So we're sitting here today, the first day of the second month of the year. We're working our way through the way of mastery so far this year, very slowly, very methodically, taking a look at what the book, what the Christ mind teachings, what the pathway is asking us to do, taking a look at what it's offering us and what it's asking us to do. And since I was here on the show yesterday, I've had just a whole slew of therapy sessions with people. I've also had the introduction to a Guy Finley talk. And uncharacteristically, usually what happens when Guy Finley posts something to Facebook, he puts a lot of good material out there for free. But usually what happens when he posts something to YouTube, it's a 1 to 2 to 3 minute snippet of some kind of an event he's done or a bigger talk he's done. And so today when I clicked on it, it was the full hour talk. And the title of it was What to Do When Your Whole World Turns Upside Down. And in it, you know, he's talking about these biblical references, the first shall come last and the last shall come first. You must, you know, in order to save your life, you must die, et cetera. All of these koans, Eastern traditions would say, these are these nonsense sayings that seem to be self-contradicting in one statement. I say, you know, you have to turn left at the next light, and as soon as you get to the next light, turn left, and then right. I mean right, turn right, I mean no, left. It doesn't make sense. What is the idea that if you do nothing, nothing is left undone? What does it mean the last shall come first and the first shall come last? What does it mean in order to live your life, you must lose your life? To save your life, you must lose it. What does it mean if you don't bring out from outside of you what is inside of you, what's within you will destroy you? If you bring out what's inside of you, you bring it outside, it will save you. What does all of that mean? So he's talking about, you know, if you start listening to that hour-long talk, he's talking about exactly what we're talking about in the first two lessons of the Way of Mastery. We are creating our experience of life, and everything about our conditioning has us trained to believe somebody else is creating my experience of life. And it's by what they're saying or doing or not saying or doing. And as a way of introducing working through the Way of Mastery this year, I read a blog post that JM wrote back in 2010. And it was in response to the question from a listener, what's the difference between A Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery, and where do they conflict? And one of the things that JM was talking about in that blog post is how many people, as students of A Course in Miracles, get stuck in the argument about how the Course says nothing is real. You're not real. The people you're interacting with aren't real. The world isn't real, etc. And Dr. Michael Rice has a wonderful video about this. It's called What is the World? And he has a way of looking at the actual words in The Course in Miracles and the actual set of teachings about what is the world from A Course in Miracles and putting it in context in a way that makes very good sense. Is it the right way? Is it the only way? No, but it's a way to look at the teachings in A Course in Miracles that make very good sense. And he even offers that to help you get clarity on it, you can learn how to change the Course in Miracles just by changing, or the meaning, getting more clear about the meaning in the Course in Miracles by changing the capitalization of the letter W in some of the uses of the word world, W-O-R-L-D, in the Course in Miracles. And he lays out a case that holds together beautifully that says, look, sometimes when the Course in Miracles says the world is false perception, that's a lowercase w world. That means the picture of perception that my mind is creating that can be drastically different from the five friends I'm standing with watching the same sporting event. And I might see a dirty play, and somebody next to me might say a really good hit, and somebody next to them might see, I was looking at the band, I didn't even see that happening. So the world that I create, and the judgments about it are false perception. And the Course in Miracles also makes reference to the world with a capital W, which is it was and remains as the Creator created it to be, and that's real, and that's more real than anything. And it says right in the beginning of the Course in Miracles, nothing unreal exists, and what is real can't be hurt or damaged or attacked. So here's this debate that a lot of people still get into. And another thing that I had the occasion to do, I looked up something that there's a newer movie, and it's called Free Guy, and it has to do with a video game that was created, and it was created hopefully to utilize artificial intelligence, and that it would be the first actual powerful example of artificial intelligence that would just keep growing and based on its primary program, but it would keep learning and evolving. And I'm watching that because I remembered a segment of that movie where they literally almost word for word have the same argument as the Course in Miracles people when they want to argue with the Way of Mastery people or a Buddhist or a Christian, and they want to argue about how the Course in Miracles says the world doesn't exist. That's not real. And so here's a character, the artificial intelligence character in the movie, and he finds out that he's not real. He's one of the non-player characters in the video game. In other words, he's a piece of software that was programmed to just always be in the game whenever somebody goes to play the game. And he's told he's not real. And so he goes to his best friend in the game and he says, what would you do if you find out you're not real and that nothing you do matters? And his friend, who is not as advanced, says, well, I'm me right now, and I'm just trying to help a friend. Okay, so what if I'm not real? The other character, who's more advanced, says, excuse me? So what? I just told you that you're not real and that nothing you ever do matters. And his friend says, yeah, so what? And he wants to shake him. He says, I just told you you're not real and nothing you do matters. His friend, who's not as advanced, looks at him and says, look, brother, I'm sitting right here with my best friend, and I'm trying to help him through a tough time, right? And even if I'm not real, this moment is right here, right now. This moment is real. I mean, what's more real than a person trying to help someone they love? Now, if that's not real, I don't know what is. And then the more advanced person had to swallow back his next level of arguing and objection and agree, this is as real as it gets. Course in Miracles lesson foiled in the movie Free Guy, right written into the dialogue. So what are we here to do? We're here to wake up to the truth of our lives and the truth of ourselves. And the Christ Mind teachings, the Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, the Way of the Servant, the Yeshua letters, want us to understand what it says right here in the first page of the Way of Mastery. The great secret is that this is the state of your reality. In each and every moment, you abide in perfect communion with the whole of creation. And since all things are but temporary modifications of the one fundamental energy that in this work they call the Christ mind, everything springs from the same creative source. In each and every moment, you cannot be a victim of what you see. And nothing is outside of you. What you experience, you have directly and deliberately called to yourself. If you hold the thought, I don't really exist, nothing I do matters, you create the experience of that. If you hold the thought, what really matters is the relationships I create with the people and things around me, you create the experience of that. If you want to judge yourself as being bad at creating or not liking what you've created, that's perfectly okay. It simply means in this moment you have called to yourself the judgment of yourself. And the solution to that in this work is just get curious and playful and accepting of what's true. Oh, I'm beating myself up again. You know, it almost sounds exactly like the voice of my father when he used to rage at me. You know, it sounds exactly the way my grandmother used to berate me and build up my brother instead. And that's my voice doing it now. That's fascinating. If I step back into direct observation with childlike curiosity and neutrality, it changes my experience of the very same negative thoughts, the very same thoughts that 5 minutes ago I would have labeled negative and brutal and abusive. What they're telling us here in this teaching is we're here to play. We're here to try out all these different thoughts. Situations that we might call fun and creative and loving, situations that we might call distracting, situations that we might call boring, situations we might call abusive. And it tells us very clearly, for ultimately, when all the possible choices within the realm of the dream of separation have been made, when they've all been tasted, when they've all been felt and been known, finally, there emerges the still, quiet voice of creation that speaks through the soul, whispering of the one capital T truth, the one capital R reality, the one capital L love, and the one peace and the one bliss that is continual. The soul begins to turn from the things of this created world, meaning the perception that we created, the interpretation and the pattern of reaction that we create when we choose an interpretation and then a response to our perception. And it begins to withdraw its attention from attachments to all the things it has called to itself. It begins to transcend its sense of identification with the vibrational frequencies that originally it had only meant to play with. And then it got tripped up and started taking them seriously. It is seriousness within the mind that is the creation of the ego and nothing else. And it is great seriousness that holds the vibrations of what you would no longer choose to experience. I'm tired of this. Why does my life have to be like this? Why is everything going wrong for me? Why doesn't anybody love me? I don't like this. I'm holding on to the experience of having a miserable life and having nobody love me. And I say I don't want it, but it's my identification with it. It's my pattern of crying poor me and rejecting it that literally holds that within the field of my being. and within the experience of my soul. And if I lighten up, if I learn to laugh at it, if I drop the seriousness, which is if I drop the judgment and evaluation from the egoic mind, I move into something else. I move into allowance, acceptance, and surrender. I move into the flow of life. You, as a soul, are an individual divine spark. And as you begin to choose to withdraw the attention and the value that you've placed on those negative perceptions and interpretations of things, as you learn to simplify the nature of your own consciousness, as you realize that you can surrender into something that in the beginning it seems beyond you, when you realize that you can entertain the insane thought of trusting the invisible, that's when you come to be more and more, less and less of what you thought you were. And as you become less and less of what you thought you were, conversely, automatically, you become more and more of what your Creator created you to be. You become more and more of, you have more direct experience of being the thought of perfect love in form. You become a channel, a simple vehicle, an open conduit through which the love of creation can shine forth. When that happens, when you've moved into that stage, your only task becomes how to clean your windows, how to polish the floors, weed the garden, blow the gunk out of the conduit, become transparent, become wide open, become a vehicle through which the light of creation can pour forth through you unimpeded. No longer will you find the need to defend perceptions that you had identified with in error. You will indeed know you have come to that state of awakening, for you will be able to look upon everything you've created, all the negative, all the places in your mind where fear has made a home. Anything that when you experienced it, you hated it or disliked it or thought it was distasteful, you'll look at all those perceptions and judgments, all those desires, and as they arise in your mind, you will be in perfect peace. And you will smile, and you will see them with your consciousness, and you'll see that they have arisen within your consciousness. And within your consciousness has arisen every thought of saintedness and every thought of devilishness. You have been both the saint and the sinner. And your happiness and your unhappiness, you will see that they've been merely an effect of where you chose to place your attention. Indeed, beloved friends, I come forth to meet you where you are because I've chosen to use the infinite power of consciousness that's given to me of the Father just as much as it's been given to you. And I've chosen to use it to discover how deep delight can be when the mind is focused only on seeing from and seeing only the higher mind of the Christ. I have therefore called to myself all multitude of experiences, even when I walked upon your earth, your beloved earth as a man. I called these things to myself to challenge myself, to test myself, to condition myself to rise above, to transcend all the possible experiences that might distract me from the remembrance of who I am. And again, they just finished stating it. Who you are, what you are, is the extension of the creative energy in form, the extension of love in form. And his goal was to remove every potential distraction from that realization, from his consciousness. The point I'm trying to make with you is that in each and every moment, what you are experiencing in the realm of your emotions and your mind and the effects within the body, to a latter degree within the body, these are there because you, from your infinite freedom, have simply selected that experience to focus your attention on so that you could see what those effects are. The insanity does not come from having chosen to see something other than the mind of Christ. The insanity that you experience as your pain and your suffering, your seeking and your dramas, this comes only from your mistaken choice to become identified with whatever it is that arises in your field of awareness. You are not your thoughts. You are not your history. You are not just the body. And when you identify with the past, the thoughts, the interpretations, the history, the judgments, you lose sight of innocence. For all events are perfectly neutral. And you are completely free to see them any way you want. When a child is born, many of you who are mothers know this, you can experience a depth of joy that's unspeakable. Likewise, you can also experience fear and contraction at the thought of having to be responsible for a child. When a loved one dies and you experience grief and suffering, rest assured it is because you have chosen to contract your attention. And then all you see is the loss of an animated body. And thereby you convince yourself that you become separated from the one that you loved. He says, I speak from experience that separation is an illusion. When death occurs in your plane, in that very moment, you still have the power to choose to recognize that something has changed. And you could choose to shift your attention to a different faculty that the body could not ever possibly contain, a faculty in which you perceive and hear and communicate with that spark of divine light, the soul, which in that moment seems to have given up the idea of trying to keep a physical form animated. You can maintain connection to all minds. All minds are joined. You can maintain your awareness of your connection. This is imperative. In fact, this is the very first step of the way of the heart, recognizing that I create my sense of grief when someone dies. I create the experience of being separated from them with my choice of perception and the focus of my conscious awareness in that moment. I could just as easily develop the capacity with another level of energy of consciousness that's outside the body. I could develop the capacity to remain aware of my instant, constant connection to all that is and every other spark in the divine mind. So here's the first step in awakening, to allow this following thought into our minds. Nothing I experience is created by anything outside of me. I experience only the effects of my own choice. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. This is true whether you realize it or not. This is true whether anybody has told you that this is what's happening. It's true even when you're living under the false perception that that person makes me angry, that person hurts my feeling, that situation is tragic, that situation is wonderful. It goes on to say that during the first part of this course, we'll be building on lessons and lesson upon lesson in what I'm choosing to call the way of the heart. This is a pathway that's unknown to the world. It is a way that's unknown to many that would call themselves spiritual teachers. For it is not a way of resting on or becoming dependent on magical means. It is rather that pathway which cultivates within you. What's it going to cultivate within you? A decision to turn your attention upon your own mind. You have a negative reaction to something, you take a breath, you turn the focus inside, and you ask yourself, how am I creating this emotion? Or you turn your focus in on yourself and you ask yourself, what am I making this situation mean? What is driving my impulse to do this particular behavior? How am I creating the experience I'm having in this moment? And once I turn the focus on that, I study it, I consider it, I feel it, I start to breathe the light of spirit through it. And I constantly retrained my mind, my egoic mind, so that it assumes complete responsibility in each moment. That's what this pathway is about. Training myself to take 100% responsibility for everything I experience in each moment. Why is this necessary? Because without it, there can be no peace. Without it, you cannot transcend the false identifications that you have chosen. You need to come to the point where you say to yourself, okay, I've done this to myself. I did it, and I must correct it. No one is to blame. The world is innocent. In the lessons that follow, we will be communicating with you more and more deeply the finer points of the way of the heart. For it is that way that was taught to me. It is that way that brings about the reversal of every thought you've ever had about anyone or anything. It is the way of the heart alone, which allows you to pass back through the eye of the needle and to come to rest in the perfect peace from which you have sprung forth. The way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. Your intellect is that aspect of the mind that was never designed to be your master. The intellect is that part of your mind that was designed to be the humble, and if you will pardon the expression, the very stupid servant of the awakened heart. What is the awakened heart? The awakened heart is that which feels all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and allows all things. The awakened heart is that in which the soul rests eternally. The awakened heart is that which is beyond space and time, and it is that spark of light in the mind of the Creator. Some have called it Christ. Only in that will you find the peace that you seek. You will discover that the pathway of awakening is not a pathway of avoidance, but a pathway of allowance, surrender, truthfulness, absolute openness. This is not a pathway of accomplishment and pride, but a pathway of releasing from the consciousness every single hope, every last wish to be special, to see yourself as having made progress. Every last wish to look good in anyone's eyes, including your Creator's eyes. This is a way in which you will come to cultivate, regardless of your inner experience or your degree of awakening, the willingness and the art of returning to simplicity, to the simplicity of empty-headedness, to the simplicity of not knowingness, and return there prior to every breath. This is a way of life in which all things and all events become an aspect of your meditation and of your prayer, until it has been established once again within you the truth that is true always. You are not the creator of yourself. It's not for your conscious, logical mind to decide how life should unfold. It's not my will, but thine be done. For of myself I do nothing, but the Creator through me does all these things. Imagine then a state of being in which you walk through this world seemingly appearing like everyone else, and yet within you are open and spacious. You're empty. You desire nothing, and though you desire nothing, you allow the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in this moment to flow through you. You allow that capital D desire to express through you. And you recognize it as the voice of creation guiding your personality, guiding your emotions, and even your body to go to places, to engage in events, to interact with people and experiences through which the tapestry of life, the atonement, the at-one-ment, is being woven. Through those experiences, all of the children of God are called home again. You begin to trust the complete flow of that, whether you're asked to give a speech in front of 10,000 people, or you're asked to tell a friend the truth of your feelings, or whether or not you're asked to sweep the streets and live penniless. For in truth, that mind that trusts the source of its creation allows all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, and thereby transcends all things. Rest assured, whenever you are feeling frustration and anxiety, it is because you have decided not to trust the truth, capital T truth. And that truth simply is this: only creation's plan for salvation can work for you. Your way must always fail. For your way begins with the illusory and insane assumption that you're separate and you're a separate being from the mind of God. And you must therefore somehow, with that 9-bit mind that Dr. Michael Rice talks about, you must figure out your own course. For if you are sick and diseased and not at peace, how'd you get there except from your own perception and your own response to the world? So why would you decide that you know how to create peace? It requires great humility to accept the first step of the path. I have done this. I must undo it. And yet I have no idea what's going on here. I don't know how I created it, and I don't know how to undo it. Therefore, I must surrender to something else. What are we being asked to surrender to? We're being asked to surrender to light, to love, to the flow of life and creation in each moment, and ask repeatedly to be shown, to learn to live in the question, to live from that empty-headedness, that not knowingness, that divine ignorance. I give you this thought, it says, and I would ask that you consider it well. What if the very life you're living and each and every experience that is coming to you now since the moment that you first decided, I've got to awaken here, what if every bit of it is being directly sent to you of your Creator from the flow of life, because the flow of life knows what's necessary for you to unravel within your consciousness to allow the space for you to awaken? What if the very things you're resisting and you see them as roadblocks, what if they're actually stepping stones to your homecoming? What if it is the only path for you to arrive where you say you want to be, in that peace, aware of that bliss, in conscious connection, conscious awareness of your connection to all of creation? What if you achieved a maturity along this pathway in which you were finally willing? This is a tough one for most of us. You were finally willing to let things be just as they are. And if it were necessary to sweep the streets, you simply took a deep breath and said, okay, creation, you know the way home, and I begin sweeping. And then instantly up into my mind comes the thought, oh, my God, I'm not going to get recognized. I'm not going to stand out. People won't think I'm special if I'm just a street sweeper. And when all those thoughts flood into my mind, aha, no wonder I needed to get knocked down a few pegs. No wonder I needed to question my egoic thoughts about how wonderful and powerful I am and how special I am. I've got to flush this up in my consciousness, take a look at it, and disidentify from it. What is it in my mind that thinks I'm better than any other human being that's ever been created, if not for ego, if not for judgment, if not for clinging to some things and pushing away others? Aha! No wonder I needed this series of events to awaken me to what I was doing with the consciousness that we call ego to create a separation and a perception of being separate from life, from which all my suffering grows. In truth, it goes on to say, I tell you, that the least among you, according to your perception, is already equal to the greatest. There is no separation. There is no degree of difficulty in miracles. There is no degree of greater or less than in human beings. And there is none among you who is less than the author of this book, than the creation itself. The way of the heart begins by accepting the humility that you have created quite a mess within your consciousness. And you've created a labyrinth and gotten lost within it. And you do not know the way back. The way of mastery begins by accepting that of yourself, you can do nothing. For all you've managed to achieve is the creation of a whole lot of insane dramas. And here's the thing about it. Those dramas are not occurring anywhere except within the field of my own mind. They're like chimeras. They are dreams. In truth, there is no difference between a waking state in which you would be the director of your life and the dreams that the body has when that you have when your body is asleep at night. They're the same. If you think you're out here to direct your life, if you think it's your job to find your way back to God, that's as insane, that's as fake, that's as much a distortion of actuality as the dreams you had last night. In the end of all journeying, in the end of all purification, and indeed purification is still necessary, in the end of all of that, you will discover that to awaken means to have journeyed nowhere. It means to have arrived at a goal that has never changed. You are and you remain as you were created to be. Awakening in that sense, then, is only a remembrance. However, it is not a remembrance of the intellect. It is not an idea as you would understand ideas. This is an energy, an idea that vibrates through the whole field of your beingness, so that even the cells of your body, while yet the body remains coalesced together, awaken and relax into the truth that is true always. What is that truth? You remain as you were created to be. You're not the driver. You're not the doer. You're being lived. You're being breathed. You're being seen through. You are part of creation. If you were a gardener, would you not cultivate the art of weeding your garden? Would you not look to see that the soil is just the right dampness? Would you not keep your eye on the clouds and the horizon and the heat of the day, cover the delicate plants when they need protection? And if the people who come to your garden don't respect it, would you not ask them to leave or build a temporary fence until the garden is strong enough, until it bursts forth with enough fruit so that you can give it even to those who don't respect it? Please be a wise gardener. Choose to cultivate deep love and respect for yourself, for you are not here to fix the world. You're not here to fix your broken brother or sister. Love does that. It is only love that heals. And until you have seen yourself as love completely, and you've purified the mind of every erroneous thought you ever held about yourself, until you see yourself completely as love, experiencing that in the moment, you do not in truth know love of anyone or anything. Sometimes in brief moments when you let your guard down, the love of God, the love of creation, this sense of connection, immediate connection to everything can break through. But it happens so quickly you don't even know what happened. The wise gardener cultivates a state of consciousness in which that flow of loving life, creative energy is constant and wide open. Beloved friends, those of you who have elected to listen to these words, participate in the Christ Mind teachings, any part of this pathway with this family, if you would make your commitment to trusting the creation and its flow through you, and trust it as having set before you a pathway that can lead you home, you will indeed arrive at home. But commitment means when your ego starts shouting, you don't get to leave the room. When a part of your mind says, yeah, but I got a doctorate and I can't clean toilets. I can't go sweep the streets. I can't answer this yearning in me to be a spiritual teacher and not collect money. I have to do that. When that happens, that's the shouting. I don't get to leave the room. The commitment I'm being asked to make here is to watching how every thought in me that generates tension, constriction, and fear is false. It means that you will stay with these things by being honest about them and loving yourself for ever having the power to create such insane perceptions of yourself and the world around you. The way of the heart is the final pathway that any soul can enter. There are many stages of awakening. There are many pathways that can be followed. But ultimately, as the saying goes, all roads lead to Rome. Eventually, each soul must find its way into the way of the heart. Each soul must come back to the truth that it is finally time to take responsibility. 100% responsibility for everything I experience. It's time to learn to cultivate the ability to look upon the deep and vicious blackness, which I have called the ego, which is nothing more than the cesspool of denial. Everything that's negative, everything that's false, everything that's bitter, tight, tense, unpleasant, painful in my consciousness is false. It's ego. And all it needs is the light of my awareness. It doesn't need a bulldozer or a jackhammer. We're called in this pathway to begin to bring light back to it by simply observing our own mind, observing our own behaviors, observing our own reactions, but observing them with a sense of wonder, not a criticism. Observing them with a sense of innocence and a sense of childlikeness. For is it not written that you must become again like a little child to enter the kingdom? The little child simply marvels at what they see and says, huh, how about that? Take a minute. Can you even imagine looking upon the deepest, darkest parts of your own shadow mind, your own denials, your own upsets, your own shames, look upon the deepest, darkest parts of them and go, huh? Wow, look at the mess I created. That's fascinating. Remember, all events are neutral, and everything that arises within my consciousness, within your consciousness, has no effect upon your actual existence as a spark of creation, as a spark of the divine mind. The way of the heart is a way of cultivating the decision to become identified with the light of consciousness, of creation, capital L light, the light that can shine away all darkness. We don't get rid of the darkness by fighting with it. We don't shovel it out. We don't take a pickaxe to it. We get rid of the darkness by bringing the light of awareness to it, by recognizing it, embracing it as our own creation, and choosing again. The way of the heart is the way that I teach. And now we begin a focused, in-depth study together that this way might become established within your own mind, within your holy mind. Remember that the truth is true always. Is it not time, beloved friends, to truly step into ownership of your own reality? The way of the heart does not know the word avoidance. It does not know deception, manipulation, or control. It does not know blame. Although it watches all of these things arise as echoes of old patterns that are now outgrown. The way of the heart learns to see them, to recognize them, like you might recognize certain kinds of clouds that pass through the sky. And then the awakened heart learns to turn the attention of the mind so that a new choice might be made. Gently, openly, lovingly, compassionately, the way of the heart is the way that calls you home. And the call that comes from trust then that you are as a sunbeam to the sun. Trust not the perceptions you've cultivated in error. How do you know they're in error? You don't like them. They're tight. They're tense. They're sad. They're scared. They're shame-ridden. You are not alone on the way that you journey, and you journey not apart from your brothers and sisters. We're all in this together. This family cannot know separation. For once the call to awaken through this lineage has been acknowledged, though some bodies may not communicate in time and space, rest assured, communication remains. You're constantly connected in the flow of creation to all of creation. We begin now the way of the heart. It is time to step into the willingness to don the mantle of one who is committed to healing every obstacle to the presence of love that may yet remain secretly hidden in the depth of that part of your mind, that part of your mind that would still create a perception that you are separate from the Creator. Remember that you are truly the light that can come to shine lovingly upon every aspect of the darkness you've known. You can learn to look lovingly on every part of your mind where fear has made a home. Along the pathway of this course, you're going to learn how to shake hands with the devil, do a little jig with him, recognize the devil's face is your own. And when you can dance with the darkness that you have created, that darkness is transformed into an angel, and light abides with light. We will be giving you certain meditations, certain energetic practices to help cultivate within you a quality of feeling, and that quality will help you realize energies that do not serve you. These will be given to you in a way that transcends what your mind may choose to think of, so that you learn more and more to lead with the body, to lead with the felt sense, to lead with your feeling nature, not your intellect. Your intellect doesn't know anything except the trivialities that you've shoved into it, like garbage into a garbage can. The intellect can never bring the healing of the heart that is the atonement. The intellect can only be utilized to argue against the insane perceptions that you're used to, so that you might come to see that perhaps, just maybe, there's a greater good in giving up your insistence on treating the intellect like a god. Therefore, beloved friends, dance, rejoice, and play often. We're going to be called to lighten up to drop the seriousness, to dance, rejoice, and play often again at the end of the second lesson. Let these lessons bring up within you everything that's unworthy of the mind of creation, the Christ mind, the one mind, the divine spark. Let it bring up every thought of scarcity and every sense of unworthiness and fear. Let them come up. Look at them, embrace them, and transmute them like your own love of self through your own honesty, through your love of self, through your own self-honesty. I remember listening to a Krishnamurti talk. He said, we must embrace our negative emotions the way we would comfort a wounded child. It's the opposite of what our culture teaches. Run away from my negative emotions. Blame them on other people. Use rage to distract from them. This pathway and these lessons are designed to help you bring up within you every thought of scarcity, every sense of unworthiness, and every fear. We encourage you to let them come up, look at them, embrace them, and transmute them through your own love of self, the capital S self, your true higher self, and through your own honesty. Accept where you are. Don't pretend to be more enlightened. Don't pretend to be more compassionate. Don't pretend to be clearer in your vision than you are. The wisest are always the most open, the most honest, and the most humble. Be you therefore, beloved friends, at peace in all things. For we, in what you would call a disembodied state, we who are electing to participate with those of you who are asking to be helped through this pathway, we delight in being here with you. We delight in sharing our love with you. We delight in waiting on you to welcome yourself home. I would ask that you close your eyes for a moment, take a deep breath into the body and let it go. And as the breath leaves the body, hold the thought that there is nothing worth holding on to any longer if it keeps your peace and your happiness at arm's length. Become committed, fully committed to the experience of happiness, every bit as much as you've been committed to unhappiness, limit, and limitation and lack. Give your Creator full permission to sweep the basement clean. There's nothing there of any value down there worth protecting. It will come to pass that you will know the perfect peace of empty-headedness, the perfect peace of not knowingness. You will know what it means to be relieved of time and to be comforted by what is eternal. Never once let yourself think that you are alone. It is nonsense for you to think that I and we are not with you. You have asked, we have responded. We are in communion and communication, and that is the way it is. And that is the way it will be until the end of all illusion. Peace be unto you always. Amen. So thanks for listening. That takes us to the end of Lesson 1. We will start again tomorrow, making our way through the little specialness that is in Lesson 2, in the Way of Mastery. And as always, as I'm in this, I am trying to monitor for anyone who raises a hand, and I will just assume at this point that people were engaged enough in the reading that they will save that for tomorrow. I encourage you to call in tomorrow and offer your comments and questions before we get started going into Lesson 2. And I would remind you, if you're at all interested, we have a support group tonight. It is a Tuesday night, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. All the information on how to join us there is available on mindshiftersacademy.org website. There is a separate page for the information on login for Tuesdays and Thursdays. Please remember today is Tuesday and use the appropriate login. And or pass this information along to anyone that you think might benefit. We would appreciate it. The more, the merrier. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. I would remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Apologies for being late.
It's perfectly all right. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, February the 1st, 2022. That's hard to believe. I told Michael that tomorrow is Groundhog Day, so I think tonight we're going to watch that movie, Groundhog Day. Kind of goes along with, why is this happening to me again? And so I think that's what we're going to do just for fun tonight. Invite you to call in. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions. That makes this your show. A whole lot better to have questions and stimulate the conversation than for us to do a monologue. And so I have on the website, while I'm waiting for Michael to dial in there, there have been several things that have changed. I'm working on getting on the app page where I've edited the shows where we walked through the two worksheets that are on the app and the Dragon Klingon game. And so I'm going to be getting those out on the website hopefully by the end of today. And I told you yesterday we already had a Beatitudes page and we have a healing generational healing page. So a lot of new things are popping up on the website, so go out there and look around. And again, if you haven't updated or downloaded the app, go to your Google Play Store or the Apple Store, either one, free download, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And we have two different wake-up sheets, the Dragon Klingon game, the commitments. I do need to update the commitment, but I will get there on that one. Michael just updated it again this morning, so he's been working on
it. And the updated one is being translated into Spanish as we speak.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nene.
So lots of things going on. So welcome, Michael.
Yes, lots of things going on. And thank you yesterday, Magda, for your call-in and discussion about that idea on my connection to our source, my connection to my source, and I knew there was something different there for me, but I didn't get it right off the bat, so I did change it. Thank you for that invitation and discussion. And I did send you a copy of it, which I assume you've probably already seen. But now that paragraph reads, my connection to love, our source, gratitude for my relationship with you and our serenity will always be more important than any issue. I open my being to embrace you and my love. I open my being to be embraced in your love. So thank you for that invitation. I think that really works a whole lot better than my connection to my source, but rather my connection to love, our source, gets it all in there. So thank you for your inspiration, young lady. Other than that, we are appreciative of everybody that's here. And then we get to engage in this conversation once again, bringing forward deeper and deeper and deeper understanding of these tools in different arenas. So been working on the arena of rage recently, watching what's happening in the world and seeing the permission that's been given for people to rage and attack, and looking at, you know, the healing of that type of mind. So that's kind of where we're going to head this morning. But first, I'm going to check with you, Miss Jeannie, and see if we've got anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room or any questions that have come in from the app.
Nope, it is all quiet on all three fronts.
Cool. Okay, well, if you happen to live in a world and a mind where rage causes you to degrade, attack, or wish to harm others over a conversation or an idea, this one's for you. And, of course, that rage can be screaming, raging, swearing, cursing type rage, or it can be quiet, deliberate, vicious rage. It happens in both ways. And, of course, we can't emphasize often enough that the rager always gets the original first and foremost, and rage damages tissue. The tissue that it's stored in, the places where it's active in physiology, will definitely talk back to you about your rage. And so honoring truth is going to tend to move things forward and open a space for that to heal. The starting point is to recognize that rage is not an emotion. The world generally talks about feeling rage and that it's an emotion. But in truth, rage is not an emotion. It's an internally produced drug that always is there to cover pain. And, you know, in 50 plus years of working with people, my observation is that pain that drives that kind of behavior, that allows people to speak degradingly, viciously to someone they've never met, maybe never will meet. You know, it might be on the internet or perhaps someone close to them. That kind of rage is generational. It's passed through aberrant behavior and usually from a parent. Carl Jung, you know, was a brilliant psychologist, psychiatrist. He offers in really easy to comprehend words insight urgent to the healing and literally the survival of the world. You know, in this simple quote, actually in a simple, couple of simple quotes, he just sums up the whole game of what threatens the planet. So in this quote, he elucidates the deepest threat to human existence, and here's what he says. Greater than all physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas. You look at the delusional ideas going on in the world today. You look at the delusional ideas being promoted by people that seem to be at the top of the food chain. And you see that those delusional ideas do a tremendous amount of damage. Well, Carl Jung says it's greater than any, these delusional ideas are greater than any physical threat. And he goes on to say, our much vaunted reason, our boundlessly overestimated will are sometimes utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. And we're getting to see that in space. Now, Carl Jung, I don't even know how long he's been gone from his body, so this was written decades ago. You look at how unreal thoughts are being promoted in the world today and how much conflict. I mean, right to the point where because of unreal thoughts, you know, Jung understood the danger of it. Literally, there are people talking about and calling for civil war over unreal thoughts, over lies. And so he says that sometimes we're utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. So with crystal clear insight, Jung explains thought disorders, and again, often implanted genetically and reinforced in the environment of early life, how they gain such a foothold. Until those thought disorders are uprooted, those unreal thoughts are uprooted and healed, these hostility and fear-based thoughts run one's life. Often against their own will and choice. You know, look at how often people get into a tirade over some kind of unreal thought based in rage and fear. Oftentimes it's the alcoholic that afterwards is so sorry. Oh, I'm so sad that I did that, and I will never do that again. And they won't until the next time they get drunk. If one never does, the thought of excavating those thought disorders, of digging them out, then every time they're resonated into activity, they're going to take over and run the mind, run behavior. So when this happens, they literally have the potential to destroy the world. And here's how Jung says that. Until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives, and we will call it fate. if one holds thought disorders and unreal thoughts in the unconscious mind, it will tend to run that person's life. So here's Jung in two simple paragraphs describing the root of the tyrant mind, this almost universal disease. You know, you look at all of the suffering in the world. You look at all of the migrations of people who've been, say, for instance, left homeless. 100% of the time, what is that a result of? A tyrant? Well, no. These people, it was because of the crops failing. Why did the crops fail? The crops failed because a tyrant was running those people's lives, probably ripping them off for everything they had out of greed. So this mind, this tyrant mind filled with unreal thoughts, is universally destructive, and it's the exact opposite of the Midas touch. These kind of thought disorders infect and destroy a child, the individual, marriages, the family, even countries. I mean, literally, today we're at risk over these kinds of tyrant thoughts. The exact opposite of the Midas touch, instead of turning everything to gold, it destroys everything it touches. It has the potential to create so much conflict that it threatens to literally eradicate the whole of humanity. And it's time for us to wake up, because it's all totally healable. And in my observation, the only persistent way to remove that tyrant mind, those unreal thoughts, is through first century Aramaic forgiveness. Yes, people accidentally run across something that, oh, they had this major healing. But can they do it again tomorrow? Can they take another layer off the next day and the next day, the next day? No. There's only one tool I know of that does that. Now, you can go back to some interviews that Dr. Tim has done where he talks about the fact that, you know, he's being a psychologist for 44 years, he's probably going on 46 or 47 now, or maybe more. And he talks about this psychologist that just was getting phenomenal results, so he went to study with him, as other psychologists have done. But nobody can replicate what those other psychologists are doing. They're getting consistently phenomenal results. They can't transfer it to anybody else. And in Dr. Chim's words, one of the reasons he's working with these tools is because he can hand this tool to anybody, and anybody can produce the result. And that's pretty exciting stuff to me. And so that first century Aramaic forgiveness process, when applied, brings these unconscious disease thoughts forward and exposes them literally to the transmuting power of active love and heals them. I can go back about 30 or so years ago and look at situations where, you know, there were maybe 20 people in a room, 30 people in intensive, and one person opened up and just experienced a monumental shift, a monumental healing. And after watching that happen over and over and over again, wondering what the common bond was between those people, what was the common link that caused healing to happen? And that was very simple and straightforward. When the healing occurred, actual conscious, active, present love was there in the room. Now, that doesn't mean some sappy, you know, so-called romantic idea of I love you was there, but literally that a conscious human entity, a conscious human being called love, was awake and actively present in the room. That was one piece in my observation of what the healing process was. The second piece was that something raw from within the unconscious was opened and allowed to surface. The conclusion I came to after observing that was that when there is something that's hidden, as Jung talks about, the unconscious that runs our lives, when that energetic pattern, that thought disorder surfaces directly. Now, by directly, I mean it isn't projected into my mind's brain's image of someone else. Remember, when we live in denial, when we think or speak as though something outside of us is the cause of what's going on inside of us, we live in denial. And that denial causes us to dissociate from something. That means it causes us to hide something in the unconscious. Something hidden in the unconscious does not change. And if we live in that, you made me mad, then that mad, the cause of the mad part of my mind I'm now dissociated from, the person who can resonate that, I'll project that part of my mind. I will literally take that content in my mind and make up an image of them. We'll create, generate a perceptual construct about them out of that content. So I'll get to be in relationship with it, but I'm in indirect relationship with it. It's hidden in my brain's image of them. And I've successfully projected it into my brain's image of them. And when I do that, I am in an indirect relationship with what I need to heal. It's not going to heal when I'm in an indirect relationship with it. I have to be able to collapse that projection. And that's done with first century Aramaic forgiveness. And when I collapse that projection and love is present, then I can directly access that which is hidden. And when that comes forward and is exposed to the transmuting power of that active present love, then healing occurs. So it's those two factors. So all of these insane, unreal thoughts can be healed. Rumi, you've heard me use his quote many times. He's a 13th century Sufi poet. He very succinctly describes the problem, the cure, and what happens as a result of the healing. And here's what he says. Love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. There he's got it. He's elucidated the problem. He's told us what the cure is and what's going to happen as a result of it. Love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its send. And what facilitates that happening on a consistent, persistent basis? I'm not saying it's the only thing that can make that happen. As I say, people have accidentally tripped across something that opened something and caused some healing, but tomorrow can they apply it again? If you take this tool, if you get it in hand, if you understand how to use it and you actually use it, then you will consistently and persistently dissolve these unreal thoughts, these thought disorders that at the most inopportune moments tend to take over your mind. Now, some correction is necessary to understand what forgiveness is, because we live in a culture that says that forgiveness is about how it's your fault that I'm experiencing this pain, but I'll be big about it and I'll let you off the hook for the pain that's happening inside of me. If you think that's forgiveness, then you'll never apply the first century tool of forgiveness. Correction is needed. That's not forgiveness. That's pardoning. We want to lay a foundation for understanding this ancient and profoundly impactful piece of technology that's designed for the deep healing of the mind. Now, remember that in the ancient Aramaic language, the word sin is an archery term. Evil is an archery term. Sin simply means if you fire at the target and you miss the target, if you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper would offer you some feedback, and the feedback, the word would be sin. You're off the mark. You missed the bullseye. If you missed the target altogether, the marker word would be evil. And so recognizing that that is an energy that's off the mark, when you engage in those energies that are not designed for humans, for those that are created love, then there is sin, and that sin, that energy that's off the mark, destroys the function of our energy systems that we mistakenly call the body. Again, when they said the wages of sin is death, it had nothing to do with a threatening God. It was just information about how people would destroy themselves with energies that were never meant for them. So we need to overcome the implanted energies that are off the mark, and forgiveness is the key to doing that. Perception is a construct of the mind that takes the place of what's true and actual in the world. So the ego mind is nothing but a construct that reflects those errant thoughts that need to be undone, those unreal thoughts. As Carl Jung spoke of them. And they need to be undone. Again, we can go back to Carl Jung. And he says, the little world of childhood with its familiar surroundings is a model of the greater world. The more intensively the family has stamped its character upon the child, the more it will tend to feel and see its earlier miniature world again in the bigger world of adult life. I wasn't familiar with this quote from Carl Jung back when I wrote the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Or it would be in the book for sure. And Jung goes on to say, naturally, this is not a conscious intellectual process. This non-being self that we identify with, that's based in energies that are off the mark, this ego self must be dissolved, and that's the aim of forgiveness. And the dissolution of that non-being self is accelerated as you stay connected to love. Commitment is one of the keys to staying connected to love. You remember the lesson from A Course in Miracles that we've talked about many times over the years. And it talks about two worlds. The world, which we might call the lowercase world, that is a construct of the mind, perception. The Course says it's a skill made us up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So we have this skill called perception that literally creates the whole world that we see. Literally a world that is not in any way, shape, or form there in front of us the way we see it. We think we're looking out through our eyes at something in the world, and that's the biggest lie that was ever told. You've never seen anything through your eyes. When you see something, when you say, I see something, you know, you can't, this eye is a one-way valve. Information in the form of light energy comes into the eye, carried on the carrier wave of light energy. Information comes into the eye, but you can't look out of the eye. The information that comes in through the eye causes brain cells to fire, and the brain cells that fire literally generate or construct this world of perception, the world that you see. And if you overlay that on the actual world, then you miss out on the actual world. Fortunately, when you understand that, you understand that that world can be collapsed. And there was a genius physicist, psychologist that lived 2,000 years ago named Yeshua, who knew exactly how to collapse that world of perception. I mean, think about it. 2,000 years ago, this man said, don't judge by appearances. Don't judge by the perceptual constructs in your mind, or you'll be all wet. And 2,000 years later, everybody still thinks they're seeing out through their eyes, and they think their perceptual constructs are true about what's out there, and never realizing that the only thing our perceptual constructs are true about are ourselves. And so what forgiveness does, when you recognize, and it took me 35 years to understand this, working with the Aramaic forgiveness process, is that that world is driven by, is literally called up to be structured by the goals that we hold. And when we cancel a goal, which seems like a really silly thing to do, the canceling of the goal collapses the false generated world of perception. And when that world collapses by canceling the goal, it collapses in on its own root. And now you've got access to the root of the errant, unreal thoughts, the thought disorders that generate the world you see and drive behavior that after you've done it, you say, oh my God, I wish I'd never done that. Ever done something you regret? Think about a specific time when you did something that today you regret that you did it. And notice that you were feeling either some form of hostility or fear when you did that. Now, I've had people in the workshop, Jean and I always ask this question, how many of you have ever done something you regret? And what were you feeling when you did what you regret? And I've had people say love. But then when we drill down to the root of it, if they've done something that they regret having done, we know that love was not the active energy in their minds, but it was what the world calls love. It was greed. It was attachment. It was sexual attraction. It had nothing to do with love. So the impact of understanding that this whole false world of perception is generated by, driven by, and called into existence by goals. Let me correct that. Called into expression by goals. The information's existent in brain cells already, but a goal calls it into expression called perception. And if you're feeling some form of hostility or fear while a particular projection is occurring, then you know that the world that you're experiencing is based on corrupt data. If you've entered into the practice of forgiveness, you know how to collapse because you know it's driven by a goal. You locate the goal. You cancel the goal. You recognize that underlying that construct, there may be, golly, generations and generations and generations and generations of thought disorders, uncountable, unfathomable energetic experiences stacked in our genes. And then you realize that there's a power in you that can undo all of that. In Aramaic, it was called Rukhudzikudcha, a literal elemental force in us that when called into action, when counted on for support, literally undoes the effects of those unreal thoughts, undoes the unreal thoughts themselves, and restores us to who we are as love. The genius of first century Aramaic forgiveness in a nutshell. And as Dr. Tim said, he can hand that tool to anybody. If you're willing to actually use it, anybody can produce the result, which to me is just delightful. So we're here to support people in refining their understanding of that tool and its application, and to support people in processing through, you know, sometimes when you cancel that goal, some really heavy stuff comes up. And so one of the reasons for this show is to be the space, to be here, to support you as you go through whatever it is that you're dealing with that needs to be forgiven, that needs to be removed. Remembering that the word forgive is to remove. It does not mean to let off the hook. And so if that resonates any questions for you, now would be the time to push one on your phone. If you're on one of those stations where we're syndicated, where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push one, through the magic of technology, that will raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know that you want to talk to us, and she'll click on your microphone. We'll get to have a conversation. But the canceling of the goal is a key step in the process. Actually, the word shabag or shabak is a word that was translated as forgive from the Aramaic, but it literally means to cancel. And what you cancel is the goal. You'll notice that you've never been upset with anybody. Of course, you've never been upset with anybody ever anyway. Your mind can pretend it's about somebody else. But notice you've never pointed that upset at anyone unless they've frustrated a goal that you hold for them. And that includes yourself. And so the canceling of the goal collapses the perceptual construct that's based in projected pain. That projected perception collapsing in on itself gives you access to the underlying hidden parts of the mind. And when exposed to love, they heal. And we're here to support you in that, in understanding that and putting it to work. I think that, the understanding the why and how of forgiveness makes it a whole lot more inspirational and a whole lot more doable rather than, well, just cancel goal because I said it. You know, the first 35 years I taught this work, I taught it and said cancel the goal because it works. I don't know why. I don't know how. It took that long working with it directly to really understand it. So please take that 35 years of, and I'm talking about 35 years full-time. Now I'm talking about full-time. Benefit from it. Recognize that whenever you hold a goal that causes your mind to use corrupt data, anything based in hostility or fear, cancel that goal so that you can access the root of the corrupt data directly, bring it forward and expose it to the presence of active love and heal. Literally healing the demons of the generations. So delighted that you're here to put that to work and to question it, work with it, and see where it goes. And so, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
No. Oh, we just had a hand go up. Area code 541,
awesome.
You're on the air. Who do we have?
Selinda.
Well, hey there, young lady. We're rocking along. Yeah. How about you?
Rocking along. Getting a lot of experiences where I'm having to deal with my hidden rage because it's showing up being thrown
good
towards me, or that's my erroneous perception, of course. I have a couple of things I wanted to share with you. One, is it possible to put those Jungian quotes that you quoted in the notes today, Jeannie? Can you do that?
Oh, I think
easily?
We could probably arrange that.
I'm adding, as I said the other day when I was talking to Jeannie, and she sent me the Fenelon quotes so kindly, that those quotes are going in my The Way of Mastery notebook that I set up to go along with that course, which is helping me a lot, like immensely, to understand
Sweet.
Your work better. Yeah. One is, I just had a friend that I've been a friend with her over 30-some years, and she's an Episcopal priest, does a lot of work with helping people unravel their lives. And I was so excited, which I will get on today and send to you about that the video and the articles about that truck convoy, I thought, oh, I'll just share this with my friend because we have talked about everything. What I didn't realize is that she has an area that is closed to any discussion whatsoever. And actually a situation happened when I thought we've had, she's actually a spiritual traveler with me, which I had the perception, which may or may not be correct, that she considered us equals as well as I considered us equals, lifting each other up by the bootstraps, you know, and helping each other with the awarenesses that we have learned. And I happened to share, oh, this is something really exciting. I'll share with her about the truckers. And I hit a stone wall, Michael. And it was really, really interesting. First of all, I was taken aback because a lot of times when I do these things, I think my perception is that I'm sharing them out of the exuberance of a two-year-old kid. You know, oh, wow, look at this. Isn't this exciting? And they're perceiving it as she's trying to tell me how it is. Or can you get an idea of what I'm trying to convey?
I hear you.
So
yeah.
I have some lessons to learn in wisdom, as the Dalai Lama said. Knowledge is knowing what to say. Wisdom is knowing whether to say it. I had just not picked up the cue
right.
from her. She'd given me some warning signs before, but I didn't realize the depth of her unwillingness to look at anything other than her point of view about COVID and all of this stuff and vaccinations. And I said something about it was beyond being vaccinated or unvaccinated, beyond politics. It was like a movement of coalescence of the heart. And she said, I don't want to hear about it. And I said, oh, fine. You know, I realized then that's really fine. And then she said, it's your choice. You can choose to be vaccinated or unvaccinated, or you can choose to be vaccinated and live, basically, or you can choose to be unvaccinated and die. And it was the energy of her voice that I found fascinating. And, of course, it kind of knocked me off my pegs for a minute. And then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, oh, how did I co-create this process? Where was my unawareness that I put both of us in this situation? That was my first thought. So back to goals again, huh? And then the second thing I thought, I have reflected, and I might have shared it with you and Jeannie and the listeners before, but way back when I was a conventional Christian evangelical, I would read the Bible a lot, and the Old Testament, choose ye this day whether you bless or curse. There's some verse in the Old Testament about this, and I have reflected on it for the last 50 years or so, and I've come to realize that everything we say, everything we think, everything we express and do and feel is either a blessing or a cursing. That's our choice, love or fear. And the energy of her rage was that of a curse. And I thought, oh, what a good lesson for me to be more mindful of what comes out of my mouth, not only more mindful of what my intentions are, but more mindful of the space that another person is in. And so I'm going to send, this is what my heart tells me to do, is to send her the commitment to our friendship.
Cool.
Does that I mean, to me, that sounds really reasonable. What better place could I start? And then to do my work.
Both the commitment and the quotes from Jung should be in your inbox.
Now, is the new... Oh, thank you.
And I sent it to you, Jeannie, to put in the notes.
Oh, good. And is this the commitment that you've just, the commitment to self and the commitment to others?
The freshest, newest, yes.
Like the chickie just laid the egg? That's beautiful.
There it
is. We did not do the commitment to yourself.
Not yet? Okay.
Oh, no. That's in the lineup, and I have several other goals on my plate, but we'll get there.
Right. Yeah, like all of us, right?
Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. So I will download the commitment to other, and I'll wait very patiently for the commitment to self, and I know that you'll mention it when it's in the downloadable form. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, at Heartland, when people would come and be on the support team and they had a suggestion, our response was, great, that's your job now. So maybe what you do is you take the commitment that I just sent you and you take the commitment to self and you integrate the new ideas from the commitment to others into self and then send it back to us and save us some work.
And challenge your own
mind as you do it.
I like that.
So do I. It would be one less thing on my plate. And I have plenty.
Sounds perfect. I will do that. Thank you so much. So
cool.
It's in my inbox in my mail, right? Mymail.com.
It is. Yeah. I emailed it to you. Just I hit the send button just as I said. It's in your inbox. So you should have it as Jeannie does as well. The quotes from, there are three quotes that I used from Carl Jung. And a copy of the first-person commitment.
Beautiful. And blessings to both of you. I am complete.
Awesome, young lady. Appreciate you. Lots of love and blessings.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right.
Well, we have 15 minutes. We've got plenty of time. Somebody press one.
If you're out there in listener land now, if I were on a platform in your hometown today, Jeannie was up there with me. We completed what has been said so far in the show. Celinda was there, and the three of us stepped down off the stage. You were in the audience. You know, we were at your local, your local bar or your local library or your local church or your local university or prison, whatever it was. Actually, I think about one of the most challenging workshops I ever did was I was in Bermuda, and the local newspaper ended up nominating me as the person of the week, and I was invited by, I forget which one of the service clubs, the Kiwanis or the Kinsmen, one of them, to come and do a presentation for them. And it was in a bar at lunchtime, and the music was going, and the bar service was open, and I'm presenting to this group of gentlemen in their service club. It was an interesting operation, interesting time. In any event, the challenges we face. So if I were in your local town and Jeannie were there and we just finished this presentation and walked off the stage, what would you walk over to Celinda and say? What would you ask her? What would you walk over to me and say, Michael, well, what about? So this is the space for that. We want to create a live space where, you know, this conversation confronts questions, resistance, misunderstanding in every mind that it touches, and if it's there, to open the conversation. So by pushing one on your phone, and if you're on one of those stations, we can't see you. The call-in number, so you're listening to us on your phone, is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening directly. And then if you push one, that raises a hand in the phone queue. So push one. Let's have a conversation. What would you be saying to me? What would you be saying to Jeannie or to Celinda if we had just covered the ideas we've covered in this show? Time for the dialogue to begin or to go to the next level. We've done the monologue. Time for the dialogue. Dyad is two, just like diagnosis. Two, agnostic, those who don't know. Diagnosis, two who don't know. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? We've got about 12 minutes left. And as I say, we've got lots on our plate. So if nobody has any questions, then I'd be willing to call the show and carry on with our, you know, we're actually, we've got a warm enough day here. We're getting ready to plant potatoes right here in the 1st of February. We're going to be planting about 10 inches down into the earth so the frost doesn't hit them. And our what we've been told is that they'll start growing. The warmth of the earth will allow them to begin and develop, and we'll have an early harvest of potatoes, sweet potatoes and regular Irish potatoes. So that's one of our projects today, aside from going and seeing Jeannie's dad and getting his hand in the Avicen and working on, he's pretty much got, you know, from 10 days of laying in a hospital bed without any exercise at all, and then a couple of weeks in a rehab facility, you know, for the last, how long now, Jeannie, 10 days now? The edema actually, you know, he used to have edema pretty seriously, and through the use of the Avicen, we got to where he had no edema whatsoever. We were able to take him off the Eliquis for the excess fluid in his body, and he maintained that actually for about, you know, about the 10 days in the hospital, about 2 weeks, almost 3 weeks in the rehab facility. And then about a week ago, it started up again. And so we've got them just about to the point where it's gone now. So
I was going to share, you know, we had shared before some of the things that were pluses for us out of the COVID experience. I spoke
right.
to my youngest brother this morning, and I was telling him, I said, you know, I don't know, have any other way to explain it except that COVID took care of Dad's skin cancers. And Stephen
right.
laughed, and he said, well, he said, now that you say that, he said he had a place on his collarbone that he actually was getting ready to call and set up an appointment for a dermatologist mm-hmm. to remove it. And he had COVID week before last. He just got out of quarantine.
Right.
And he said it fell off.
Yep.
So
yeah.
That place on his collarbone fell off as well. So
yeah, I'm watching day by day as the blessing of COVID unfolds in my body. It's awesome. And,
yeah.
I'm
not sure
like
what
I
had some extreme stomach pains earlier this week, and those have gone away. I'm not sure if that was some kind of leftover from COVID or what lesson was in that, but I'm glad that's passed.
Another layer peeling off.
Yeah. So we've got 9 minutes. Oh, a hand just went up again. Oh, actually, two hands
Great.
Just went up.
Awesome.
All right. First one is 904. I believe it's Dusty. You're on the air.
Well, aloha, everybody. It's good to hear your voice.
Aloha and welcome, young man. How's your mouth doing?
My mouth is, I'm hanging in there for now. It's an ongoing process, you know. Yeah, so, but that's good. It's
Bless
good.
Your
Thank
heart.
You for asking.
Okay.
And the gal that just called, I spaced out her name.
Celinda.
She mentioned Celinda, beautiful name. And Celinda, if you're listening, thank you for you made a comment that strikes really quite deeply in me, something to the effect where you were exuberantly coming from a two-year-old place, in other words, a place of just pure, exuberance about sharing, and it didn't seem to be met on the other side of things. And that happens to me too much, I say. It happens to me. you know, it says in one of our more popular books that lest you be as little children, you know, that one, not it, you don't get into heaven kind of thing, and all that. And I find that I have never really looked down at anybody. I've never really looked up at anybody. I try to look across and then
right.
just allow what's natural to happen. So I do that, and it's amazing. I find myself 95% of the time I can meet someone on a very narrow path, and it will be me that says a hello or hi. Not,
right.
not the other one. Sometimes right. there's not an answer back. Anyways, I find myself coming from that place, and I think it's a place of beauty, and I think it's a place of, well, it's certainly spontaneous, and it's, I feel like there's love and youthful glee in there. And, of course, Picasso said something about youth has no age. And I got every now and then I would be stifled because just that would be thrown kind of back in my face by somebody. And I would, not always, but once in a while. And the other day I had a kind of a breakthrough with that. It was really rather cathartic. I was just at the beach, and on one of those rare occasions at sundown, I brought my guitar and I was playing. And if I'm the only one standing there, if there's not a friend standing with me, sometimes I would feel a little self-conscious because I'm standing close enough to the ocean where if there's people coming and going at all, you know, there I am, and I'm not trying to impinge
right.
upon them. I'm not, or anything, you know, I'm not trying to take over the space. I'm just sharing the joy. And I would feel kind of pulled back in and reticent. And the other 5 days ago, it was so good. I just realized, forget it. You're down here for the joy of it, to come from that wellspring, that pure spring of clear water in the center of you. And that's where the music comes from when it's the best. Just close your eyes and do it. And it was so freeing and so beautiful. And you know, and it's funny that some people would go just maybe downwind a little bit because they could be heard better there and not say a word and walk away after a song or something, you know, after a couple of songs. But just to be able to come from that place, which is where I kind of have to come from in the music, and to just not reel myself in too much on that. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to be the guy that opens the door, that lets the old lady goes ahead of me in the marketplace, says hi. I don't care. I am that guy. I'm going to have to be that guy. Be honest. And
well, I'm with
said,
you 100%.
Yeah, and I really appreciate what some of you said because it just brought that up for me so I could actually verbalize it. And thank you
right.
for that.
The and gifts from our friends.
Yeah, and I think you know where I'm coming from there. And it's also I have just to follow through a little bit off to the edge. I have friends. I have four or five friends that I see are getting old. They're getting to be like old farts. And the universe is closing in on them. And like, I'm going to go out in the ocean here in a little while, and it's 55 degrees, and the air is about that, and a little more. And so what? And it helps keep me alive and growing. And I think it was Dylan that said, that which isn't busy being born is busy dying. And so
right.
I would just I would be the cheerleader for anybody that just goes out in the world and just lets that place inside them come out, regardless. And if someone wants to misinterpret it because they don't have that language, then that's not on you. It's not on me, I don't think.
If someone misinterprets it and that misinterpretation brings up something for me, that's on me, not on them. Person involved engaged in the conversation needs to be responsible for the constructs of their own minds. And I think we're just so used to in this culture making the construct in my own mind somebody else's responsibility and forgetting that, every time that particular painful construct has occurred in me, it was occurring in me. I was the one that was there. and there maybe were a myriad of people, but I'm the one that was there every time. It's about me, and that's my work. So it's an important principle to remember.
And it is. And thank you for that, because I live alone and have for the last few years. So I have a tendency to maybe dwell on some of that stuff longer than I need to. And the fact that that would bother me, I just had to get over it. And just more and more, because you're right. If I react to the non-reaction or whatever it is in that other person, then it's on me. I was
my
expecting
work.
Something.
Yeah.
it doesn't make any difference, the sun shines and the good Lord loves and all everybody and everything, anyways, I'm just sort of rattling on here, but I was excited by the fact that someone said that, and it just keyed up that thing in me.
Cool.
So I appreciate it, Michael, and everybody. I know we're near the end here, so I'm going to
All right,
off.
My friend. You have a blessed one.
Thank you so much, both of you. Okay.
Okay. Take care. Appreciate
Bye.
You. Bye-bye. We've got a couple minutes. Jeannie, you've got another hand up. We can run the show out.
Okay. It was actually Celinda again, so I'm going to turn her mic back on.
Go for it. Welcome back.
I'm here.
yes,
thank
ma'am.
Thank you for what he said. That was encouraging. And thank you for what you said, Michael, because that was also encouraging. It's just to realize that if I have a reaction, it's mine. If someone else has a reaction, it's theirs. And
exactly.
One of the things that surprised me, and it's just something I can look at, is that I thought I was sharing a love event, a really deep awareness love event that these truckers are experiencing and creating. And she didn't see it that way.
And someone living in terror of COVID wouldn't exactly experience that. That probably wouldn't be what their mind would generate. And so it might be helpful to create a space for others to have their own perceptual constructs about things that perhaps don't match yours.
And I also had one other visceral. We're really down, and I can hold it until tomorrow if you like.
We're right down to the last 60 seconds or so. So we'll look forward
I'll
to hearing from you tomorrow then, young lady.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Blessings. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org. AGAIN.org.